Thank you. Be seated. Court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioners in Wilson versus Parks and Wildlife Department.
May it please the court, Mr. Morrison and Mr. Hazel will present argument for petitioner. The petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Morrison will open his first statement.
Good morning, Justices. May it please this honorable court. My name is Will Morrison. I will be appearing today on behalf of all of the petitioner appellants in this cause. I will speak to you briefly about the state of the venue facts that were before the Travis County Trial Court at the time of hearing on motion to transfer the venue and why venue was established in Travis County. I will defer the majority of the time, as the clerk has already announced, to Professor Pat Hazel, who will speak to this honorable court about the general concept of venue law in the state of Texas and the recently decided Ruiz versus Conoco case. At the time the plaintiffs filed suit in Travis County, they alleged, that is, we alleged, amongst other matter, the wrongful death of the Wilson brothers and negligent acts that occurred in Travis County. Specifically, the negligent design of the early flood warning system, the negligence involved in the failure to arm the Johnson City River Bridge sensor, the negligent failure to arm and rearm the sensor system as a whole, the negligence in designing the system such that it did not provide for audible coverage to all parts of Pernell's Falls State Park. Further negligence in their development of publications and printed material handouts, maps that was given to the park patrons to rely upon the early flood warning system. The development of signage, the content of signage and where to place these signs within the park, again causing the park patron to unduly rely on this early flood warning system. Still negligence in the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department failure to enforce existing rules and regulations concerning the operation maintenance of the early flood warning system. Generally, justices, the negligent use, the negligent continued use, the negligent condition of the early flood warning system. All of these acts complained of as being negligent occurred here in Travis County. At the time of the hearing on the motion to transfer, all of plaintiff's causes were consolidated. Your plaintiffs were before the trial court on their second amended original petition, alleging these venue facts here in Travis County. Your defendant was before the court on its first amended motion to transfer, which wholly failed to specifically deny and didn't even address any of the plaintiff's pled venue facts at the time of hearing. Nonetheless, your plaintiffs chose to support their venue facts here in Travis County. We offered verified affidavit as Rule 87.3 prescribes. We further supported by deposition testimony, that is excerpts of deposition testimony from defendant witnesses whose testimony was never controverted at any time. It is also interesting to note at this time, just before coming to the hearing on motion to transfer venue, that the defendant urged no objections to plaintiff's pleadings. They filed no special exceptions. They took us as we were, as we presented ourselves with our pleadings. Rule 87.2 states specifically that venue facts pled, not specifically denied, shall be taken as true. The defendant did not specifically deny our pled venue facts here in Travis County, and therefore it is petitioner's position that the venue facts were conclusively established as a matter of law. Instead, your defendants chose to treat place of occurrence as mandatory exclusive venue under the Texas Tort Claims Act, Rule 101-102. And they pled two facts to support this mandatory exclusive venue, being that the deaths of the Wilson brothers occurred at Pernalis Falls State Park, and the park was located in Blanco County. But neither of these pled facts had one thing to do with regard to specifically denying any of plaintiff's pled venue facts. And the plaintiff, we did not choose to deny these venue facts because they were true. But that's not what Rule 101-102 of the Texas Tort Claims Act states. It states in pertinent part that a petitioning plaintiff shall bring his or her cause of action in the county of occurrence or in the county where a part of the cause of action arose. And that's exactly what we did, Justices. We brought our cause of action here in Travis County based on the venue facts that were properly pled and supported.
You agree that venue, you could have filed the suit initially in Blanco County?
Yes, Justice, if we had found there to be other supported venue facts.
Or just if you would have preferred to sue there and the law would, the Tort Claims Act would allow it, it would be, as I understand your briefs to say, that's a matter of the plaintiff's unilateral choice.
Yes, Your Honor, and assuming, of course, that we did have proper venue facts in that county.
When the case is transferred to another case where you might have sued if you had chosen to sue, what policy justification can you offer for us excluding this kind of determination from the normal operation of the harmful or the harmless error rule?
Justice, I'm not sure I understand your question, but I'll try the best I can. I think we do not reach the harmless error policy consideration here in the case at bar because of our specific guidance under Rule 87, 2 and 3. We had venue facts properly pled and supported, and we had no specific denial. Therefore, the matter of this other county being proper venue and the possibility of that transfer being harmless, we do not reach.
Even though the facts were not denied, they must still establish the venue was proper in Travis County.
Yes, Justice.
If not enough just to allege some facts which perhaps cannot be denied, they must still be sufficient to hold venue in Travis County.
Yes.
Do these facts hold venue in Travis County?
Yes, Your Honor. These
How facts, is that?
Our facts that we properly pled did hold venue under 101-021, I believe, subpart 2 of that statute, and there are other cases that have addressed this matter, specifically, I believe, recollection permitting the Harris versus Galveston County case and the Jenkins versus State case.
And this is because decisions were made in Travis County that were eventually carried out in Blanco County that you complained.
To some extent, yes, Your Honor. The total design of the early flood warning system occurred here at Texas Parks and Wildlife headquarters in Austin. All of the staff worked on it. We had this expert testimony that we offered in deposition excerpts to support our venue facts.
So you could complain of the design of any state work anywhere in the state in Travis County if it was drawn up here?
Well, yes, Your Honor, but we had more facts than just the design. We had other matters that pertained to the early flood warning system, as I've already alleged.
Because of the state of the record at the venue, at the time venue was determined by the trial court, do you argue that we must consider that Blanco, for purposes of this case, was an improper venue?
Yes, Your Honor. For the reason, and if I may continue briefly right quick so that we can proceed with Professor Hazel, the defendant did not specifically deny any of plaintiff's pled venue facts, and you'll find that this admission at page 16, lines 3, 4, and 5 of respondent's reply brief. And instead, the defendants were erroneously relying upon their overreading of the Texas Tort Claims Act, wherein they just totally ignored the latter part of the statute provision providing for the plaintiff suing in the county where a part of its cause of action arose. And the two cases, Hart versus Texas Department of Corrections and Bishop v. State, both of those cases are readily distinguished from the case at bar in that in neither one of those cases were there allegations of venue facts in any other county than the county of occurrence. In conclusion, justices, at the time of hearing before the Travis County Court, your plaintiffs stood before the court with undenied, unaddressed, supported plaintiff's venue facts here in Travis County and no mandatory exclusive venue. Thank you, and I could defer to Professor Hazel.
While I'm approaching, may it please the court, how much time do we have? 4 minutes. I appear before this court as amicus curiae. As the court well knows, I had sent an amicus brief on this point about the very question the two of you were last inquiring about in the Ruiz 1 opinion, because of language in there that I was afraid would be taken to mean what the court said in Wilson. I think there is even a bigger problem that I've noticed in all of the opinions of the courts of appeals to this point. That is the following thing that you raised exactly, Justice Cornyn, and that is once venue is proper in the county where the lawsuit is filed, can it be proper anywhere else? Those courts have said yes. I think they're clearly wrong, including the Maranatha case. It reached the right decision, I think, for the wrong reason. If this court will adopt that position, and I will argue for it, I hope, I think it will do two things. One, I think it will, first of all, make the statute make some sense and be equitable, as we all know, TTLA and TADC fought and compromised, and this is what they came out with, essentially. It will also make it consistent with the rules of this court, particularly Rule 87, but what it will also do is prevent something that the legislature was hidebound to stop, and that is the interlocutory appeal, because now it's going to get substituted for by mandamus, because what this trial court did violated the rules of this court, Rule 87, and as you said in Henderson versus O'Neill, when they do that, they got a right to mandamus. So here we go again. I think the problem comes not from the statute. I've provided the court with copies of both the statute and with the rules relating to venue, because I thought it would be easier to look there than try to flip back through books if you wish to. I have highlighted in the statute every place where I can find that it would say proper. And in the first part of the statute, there's no reference at all to proper. It talks about where you can bring it brought, where a suit may be brought, where it may be commenced, where it may be, defendant may be sued. It first comes up, proper is used in 15.061, but it's properly joined and proper objection. Proper venue first arises in 15.063, and this is the language that I think was a little bit ambiguous when they wrote the statute in all candor. They could have said it better. It says, the court on motion filed and served, and then they talk about transfer an action to another county of proper venue. Another county of proper venue. What does that mean? Does that mean that there can be two simultaneous counties of proper venue? Does it mean another county also a proper venue? Does it mean another proper county? Or does it mean another county of proper venue? Well, let's look at the rest of 15063. Number one says, when you can do that is when the county in which action is pending is not a proper county. Okay, that makes sense, doesn't it? This isn't proper, so transfer it to another county of proper venue. The next provision says where an impartial trial can't be had there. Well, I must stop.
Would you please finish your statement?
Well, if a trial can't be impartial there, and either party can raise that question, it's not the choice of, you know, who filed it there, plaintiff can bring it, defendant can. Then that raises the question again. All right, now we have to transfer this case. Where do we transfer it to? I think it reopens this potential for propriety. Also, if you look at Rule 259, because it governs, you can't just transfer it anywhere. You've got to transfer it to within the very limited provisions of Rule 259. The consent one, that's the third one, obviously, if the parties consent, who cares? If everybody gives written consent to where this lawsuit can be tried, we court to transfer it anyway. There is one they left out.
Ms. Hazel, it,
yes.
What is the purpose of the venue statutes? It seems to me the basis of your argument is if you've got several counties that could be proper, that's really just an option for the plaintiff to pick. What's the underlying purpose of having a venue statute to begin with?
Well, the venue statute was there to do several things. One is to establish where venues could be proper. Both mandatory or, and the rules.
Well, really, actually, what, is venue some sort of notion of where is a better place to try a lawsuit? I mean, you.
Well, historically, I don't think so at all, Your Honor. It started off, as we all know, with a plea of privilege where a defendant had a right to be sued in the county of his residence, that was, or his domicile.
Doesn't that undercut your assumption that really is the plaintiff?
That would have some real merit under the old plea of privilege, but when they changed that statute, they didn't say anywhere where a defendant had a right. Now, they first said, the first provision says, you shall bring the lawsuit either where the cause of action approved or where the defendant resides if the defendant's a natural person, unless, and then, you know, they give all the exceptions. Well, the exceptions under the old, even under the plea of privilege, pertain to the plaintiff. The plaintiff was the one who had the benefit of exception. Under the new, they also pertain to the defendant. When defendant filed a plea of privilege, the only place they could go was either where I reside or where it's mandatory. Now, they can, if they say it's improper there, I can pick as much as the plaintiff can. I think the whole theory of venue has changed as a result of that statute. There are lots of places where lawsuits may be filed, some where they must be filed if they're challenged.
Isn't the nature of venue, the nature of the venue concept really a concept of where a defendant has the expectation of being sued and tried, and it's not a concept of the plaintiff has, you know, plaintiff gets to the courthouse and files first, they get to pick venue. It seemed to me your position started out with the premise that it was the plaintiff's choice unless the defendant established something else. And I'm wondering if that jives with the historical notion of venue, which was it was the defendant's right where to be, the reasonable expectation of the defendant, where they would have to defend their actions as opposed to a plaintiff's right.
Well, even under the old, first of all, plaintiff could file suit in many, many places. And if defendant didn't like it, defendant then could file a motion or plea of privilege. Now, the whole statute is directed, and when you read it, it says where plaintiff, where you may commence or bring a lawsuit. That's what it talks about.
All right.
That's the whole, all those first ones are where they may be brought.
Okay.
Not where someone can have a transfer. Then they get to the transfer at the end. So I think it has taken on a very different role now.
Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Hazel, let me just make sure I understand the bottom line. Your contention is once plaintiff files suit in the proper county, no other county is also proper?
That's right.
It becomes the proper county unless venue is mandatory.
That's right. Well, mandatory unless the first one wasn't proper. That's the other thing. And if you look at 15, the last, no, I'm sorry, it's in your room where you talk about the proper county. Not the statute.
Any other questions?
Any other questions?
Thank you. The court is now ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Kane will present argument to respondent.
May it please the court, I'm Delmer Kane with the Attorney General's Office, and I'm here representing Parks and Wildlife. Petitioners are asking this court to reverse and remand for a new trial, a case that was tried without reversible error in a trial court in which the negligence of the decedents was found to be, by a jury, to be the sole cause of their deaths. I don't think that that is the result that the venue statutes should be and was enacted to encourage. The spirit of the venue statute when it was enacted and the reason for its enactment has been set out by this court in recent, very recent decisions. It was set out because venue had become such a problem that it was inordinately expensive and it was taking up a large part of the court's time. As Justice Hightower has indicated in the first Ruiz opinion, one out of 12 cases before 1983 was actually had a venue-related problem. One other source has indicated there were some 600 pages of annotations in the venue statute. So this is not the kind of situation in which what we should be doing after a full jury trial of 2 weeks, we should be going back and saying, this case needs to be tried again. And the only policy reason that we can give is because it was the choice of the plaintiff to bring it here rather than in Blanco County where all of the pertinent facts occur.
Do you agree that the whether it's a good idea to reverse a trial after it's been tried and judgment been rendered on a venue decision is one that the legislature has made and quite clearly said that it cannot be harmless error? So there, if there is error, it simply has to go back.
I agree, and I agree with what you have indicated in your opinion in Ruiz too, that the time, or what the court has said,
or the court's opinion.
Yes, what the court has indicated is that if it is not proper if it's not proper by any set of facts, then that case needs to be reversed.
Was venue proper here in Travis County?
We have disagreed that venue was proper at every level. And we still continue to disagree that venue was proper. I think a more appropriate statement of the venue facts would be that the two plaintiffs, two families, filed two separate petitions. Neither of those original petitions alleged any appropriate venue facts. The state
filed its response and filed then an amended motion to transfer venue and alleged that venue was proper in Blanco County. It was only then that the plaintiffs came forward and alleged venue facts that they said made it proper to file the case in Travis County. The venue facts properly pled, properly accompanied by affidavits, were first pled by the state. The petitioners have indicated that because we did not deny their venue facts, that we had waived the issue of mandatory venue being there. It is the petitioners who should have denied the venue facts appropriately. I think, as we have all indicated, neither side actually made the specific denial that some of the courts of appeals have indicated is necessary to deny the actual facts that were there. But certainly,
if you take the plaintiff's facts as true, would venue proper in Travis County?
I don't think, even if you take their facts as true, if you consider the whole record, because the whole record also indicates, and that being the fact that was found by the jury in question 10, was that these petitioners, the decedents, were outside the bounds of the park. There can be no cause of action because there was no duty even to warn if they were outside the park. So if this court, considering all of those facts, I think could deny that there were appropriate venue facts. I also think, as the court has written in Morial, one of the latest cases, one brick does not make a fence. And it seems to me that simply alleging that there were things that were done here, such as the consideration of a warning system, does not mean that the plaintiff then has shown a part of the cause of action that's necessary. Because until that warning system is actually put on the ground, it's actually put in Blanco, there is no cause of action. Until that warning system, and this was all done by the individual park superintendents, until the park superintendent who was there knew that the water was coming down and didn't, well, first of all, it was not rearmed because of a previous flood, but also because he did not arm it again when he knew that the water was coming down, this certainly does not have anything to do with the cause of action that was being alleged there. So for those reasons and for the policy reason that I can't imagine that the legislature enacting the Tort Claims Act wanted to have every decision that may have some possible connection to Travis County become a part of a cause of action that would give rise to Travis County being a proper county of venue under the Tort Claims Act. I think all of the decisions were made about this particular event. The deaths occurred there. The witnesses were there. That's why we did not agree that it was proper here.
Do you agree that if there is some evidence in this record to show that it was proper here, that it should not have been transferred to Blanco?
I think it was probably under the rules of the under the rules of civil procedure, probably should not have been. Although I think there is a question.
So you agree in essence with Professor Hazel that if venue was proper here, it was not proper anywhere else.
No, I do not agree with Professor Hazel that if it was proper here, it was not proper anyplace else. And I don't think that's what the statute requires. Certainly does not say that once, and I think that goes to the essence of the problem as has been focused, is whether or not are you going to make the determination, is the scope of the review going to be on the determination that was made here in Travis County, or is it going to look at the total facts and look at the at whether or not it was proper in the ultimate county of suit. I think it can't, the decisions that are made here may have some impact on whether or not it's proper in Blanco County, but I think the scope of the review has to be, was Blanco County the a proper venue for the trial of this case?
Then I don't understand your position, because I asked you earlier if venue was proper in Travis County, then was it an error to transfer the case to Blanco County, and I thought your answer was yes.
I don't think that I didn't mean to give you that answer to this extent. Simply because it was error does not mean that it's not a proper county. Blanco is not a proper county.
Well, it may have been an error to transfer, but it's not reversible error.
That's exactly right. And I think that because if you take Professor Hazel's position, then what it does is it focuses your review not on where the suit was ultimately tried. It focuses back on the original decision to transfer. And that, again, puts us right back into a pre-1983 condition. We're going to be, and perhaps even worse, because now we're going to be getting full trials, which will have to be reversed and be tried again, rather than the interlocutory appeal that we had prior to 1983. We're going to be trying full trials and then saying that those have to be tried again. Because if your determination is focused back on, did the first venue court make an appropriate decision, it actually makes you try the case twice, if there is error. And we must consider that that's the only time that we're going to be here, is when we're considering that it's a wrong decision. If this was an appropriate decision, then there wouldn't be any problem. It seems to me that the state's position is that the rules, that there has to be some determination made some point.
Your position would be if the case had been transferred to some county where venue was clearly not proper, then that would be reversible error even after the case was tried without any other error.
That's right.
Why is that?
Because that's what the statute says. That's what the statute says, that if it is improper, it will in no event be harmless error. So it's only those cases in which there is no venue facts for that county where the case is ultimately tried, that we have a case that has to be retried. It seems to me that fits in with the, it takes these cases, it de-emphasizes venue on appeal. We have to have a decision that is made early on as to where the case is going to try. But we don't have to say that because the decision was improperly made, that the case has to be retried. Especially if, in this case, we have a venue where everything was appropriate. The acts of alleged failure to warn had to occur when these people entered the park. The deaths occurred because they had entered onto state grounds. So it seems to me that this is exactly the kind of case that the legislature had in mind when it enacted the statute. I think that has, this court has indicated Ruiz, if I could call it the second Ruiz opinion, the motion for rehearing was overruled as late as the 4th of this month. And in both of those cases, this court has indicated what the appropriate review is going to be. And both of these have cited Dan Price's article, that was what the understanding of both sides in the consideration that were made prior to the statute going to the legislature. That is kind of the legislative history in this case, because as I understand,
both of these, when both sides agreed, this went to the legislature without any discussion whatsoever after that point. But that was the condition of the agreement. So it seems to me that that has been cited by this court in its opinions, and no one in the 11 years since then has indicated that there was some other decision or that there was some other thought. Mr. Price's article was written in 1983 or 1984, and no one has come forward and said this is not what this meant. This was not the agreement that both sides had. I would address briefly the language of the rules, which I assume that Mr. Hazel will talk about. The rules, in as my understanding, were certainly drawn up with a great deal of haste because no one actually knew that this statute was going to pass. Apparently, when it was passed, it was to take effect in September, and so that meant that the court had a committee that drafted the rules that were to help implement what the statute had indicated. 83C, Rule 87, 3C, indicates that if the claimant has adequately pled and made a prima facie proof that venue is proper in the county of suit, then the cause shall not be transferred but shall be retained in the county of suit unless there is an established grant of mandatory venue. I think in this case, even if we were to assume that venue were proper, it's not exactly prohibited by the rules because it does seem to indicate that that if it's an established ground of venue, mandatory venue, then there's not an express prohibition that it not be transferred. Russell McMaines, who also did a review of the legislative history from the plaintiff's point of view in 1983, indicated that one of the things that was considered was whether or not a district judge would accept competing affidavits on a given venue fact and then make a decision. That was not the rule that was accepted, but certainly that is something that was at least considered by the committee appointed by this court to look and see how this statute was going to be adopted. And I say that because I think that the rules are here really to implement the statute. And there is no provision for not transferring, actually, from one mandatory to another, except the rule that we've said that if it's proper. So it seems to me that that is not something that is actually prohibited by the rules themselves.
Ms. Payne, if a harmless error analysis is applied to the transfer of a case from one proper county to another proper county, can you envision a circumstance under which that transfer could be considered harmful?
I think that there's one caveat, and this may not be what you're talking about. You may be asking something specific, but I think there is one caveat. I think if the trial court were to transfer this from a mandatory court to only a permissive court, I have some concern there because the statute says that it shall be brought in that mandatory venue. I have some concern if it's transferred from a mandatory to a permissive venue.
Well, are you referring to then the statute's pronouncement that if it's from a proper to an improper county, then it's no event harmless?
That might be harmless because that contravenes the statute itself.
Well, going back to my question, the argument made here is this is a transfer from a proper county to a proper county. Mr. Hazel, Professor Hazel, raises the argument that once a proper county is established where the plaintiff files, then any other county must be improper, so that he brings it under the provision the statute says that in no event that will be harmless error. You are arguing, well, this is there can be more than one proper county, and this is a transfer from a proper to a proper. Under your argument, then, you would say that we would exercise a harmless error analysis to that decision. And I'm asking you, can you envision a circumstance where that could ever be, a plaintiff could ever meet the harmless error test? How could a plaintiff demonstrate that there's harm here?
Well, I think one of the ways is, and certainly what was attempted here was to show that they could not receive a fair trial. And so that is an additional venue determination that may be made. I've thought about that, and it seems to me that there might be some circumstance, but it would have to be on the facts of the case, that if there was a determination that because of the venue where it was sent, that for some reason the plaintiff could not present his case there either, and of course but of course the statute says and implies that it's proper under the statute, so I struggle with that, but I'm not going to say that it would be impossible to show that it was reversible.
So you're saying the way a plaintiff would present this case is if it got transferred, you get to the transferee court, the plaintiff would then file a motion to transfer venue and bring some sort of basis for saying either this isn't a proper county or one of the rules where you get three witnesses affidavits saying a fair trial can't be had in this county or something. So you'd have to, the plaintiff would actually have to reinitiate the transfer issue there in order to demonstrate this harm.
I think they would have to raise an additional point and perfect an additional point to show that although it does not appear to be harmful under these particular facts, it actually turned out to be harmful.
What deference is a plaintiff's choice of venue entitled to?
Well, I think that it is
if any at all.
I think it's entitled to some because the statute gives some in permissive, it gives a permissive venue. But it does not rise as one of the courts has indicated, to a fundamental right. The old FOIA privilege could be waived. These are simply rights that certainly can be waived, so that I don't think they're fundamental. But I think that if, as any trial court will try to do, it will try to do what it thinks is right. And I think that within this statute, there is some leeway for the plaintiff filing a suit in a permissive or even a mandatory venue. But it seems to me that once we get down to the point of it being transferred and we have a full trial, the legislature has spoken and said that unless it's absolutely improper, it should not be given a reversible error status. And so I think that it was built into the statute. Some choice was there. But I think as the statute was trying to accomplish, we don't want to have appeal after appeal and tie up the courts in cases which have been properly tried.
Any other questions? Thank you, Counselor.
Professor, help my understanding of what you just said about proper. Was it your argument that if it is that an attorney preparing his plea, looking at the evidence that he proposes to you, and makes a decision about venue, he has a choice, and he knows that he could file the case in one or the other county. And once he makes that choice and files it, if that is a proper county, then from that moment on, the other county would have been improper.
Unless there is, if the first one was permissively proper and there is a mandatory proper,
If they were both permissive.
Both permissive, or I suppose, as is in this instance, both mandatory, perhaps.
And if he, what is the purpose then of that? Is that to always give the petitioner the choice rather than the court the choice of saying, well, you could bring it here, but I don't want to hear it, so you go to another county?
It's essentially, yes, to give the plaintiff the choice of where I'm going to file this lawsuit, so long as I do it within what the legislature has said where I may or must file it. I can't just file it anywhere. I've got to look at the statute, see where I can file it. Then I have to make a choice. Can I support it? You know, here I can look at a county or a number of choices that I may have. Which one can I support if they challenge it? And then file there. If you don't do that, if that's not what this statute and the rules mean, then what are plaintiffs going to do? They're going to say, what difference does it make where I file a lawsuit? The judge can transfer it anywhere he wants to. He can say, defendant, you live in that county? Good, let's send it to yours. Because I know it'll be proper there. One defendant lives there. All the defendants are sued there. It's got to be proper there. Judges can just get rid of their cases. I say, I don't want to listen to all this.
Venue was improper in Travis County, then there was no harm in transferring it to Blackwood.
No.
And you have not yourself addressed, although...
No, I haven't addressed that. I've heard this, and I would want to respond to one thing. It seems to me that the whole purpose of these rules to say that you must specifically deny pleaded in fact is to keep your mind behind the law. You can't say, hey, let's don't deny them. Let's wait till we get to trial and we'll show they're wrong. Well, if you can do that, why ever deny them? Why not wait till trial and show they're wrong? And that's why I think the court's required. And if you don't specifically deny them, then you just waive the issue of challenging that. Now, if you have a mandatory and that was only permissive, that's different. I don't think you have to specifically say, yeah, I grant it permissively.
As we said in Ruiz, it ought not to depend solely on what's offered at the time of the determination.
No.
All the evidence that comes in.
Exactly right. That was, and that's where I think, and I'm sure we're all aware that Dan Price's untimely death quite recently. But I don't, what he said is the determination is that the trial court made, that's not the issue. And he's absolutely right. That's not the issue. The issue is, was it proper where it was tried?
But in making that decision, we've got to look at the whole record.
You have to look at that decision, too. That's part of it. Just because it's not the issue doesn't mean it's unimportant. But then we look at the entire record, including the trial on the merits, to decide whether or not it was proper. Now, to me, that then what you look at, was it proper where it was filed? And as you, all of this court's already addressed in the second release, one of the big problems that, how in the world, what kind of evidentiary things do we look at? And I think you probably came up with the right solution on
it. So if you say it was proper where it was filed, you don't even examine the question if it's proper where it was tried?
No. I think that precludes it being, unless they claimed it was mandatory as over permissive. I think that just doesn't need to be made. Otherwise, what can happen is plaintiffs can file, say, all right, I picked a county that I know is proper and I can establish is proper. And defendant says, I'm going to deny that. I'm going to specifically deny it. I'm going to seek transfer to another county that I think would be proper.
And, in this case,
and then the judge can say, to heck with both of you, I'm going to send it to another county that I think would be proper.
And
if it turns out under these rules, it is.
In this case, you have a situation where that it was proper for it to be filed in Travis County.
Yes.
Number one, and then number two is that they did not refute that?
Well, I don't know what, if I'm hearing the argument, it seems they did not specifically deny the pleaded venue facts. And that, if you don't specifically deny it, you establish the propriety. And even, I think, under those circumstances, if the trial on the merits shows, hey, that was wrong, if you've got to stick with your failure to specifically deny, otherwise people are going to say, let's don't specifically deny, let's wait till we get to trial and see if we can't defeat it. It's lying behind the log, and it's not letting the trial judge even have a chance to rule on it.
Mr. Taylor, one of the evils that the legislature tried to remedy is the interlocutory appeal and the redeterminations. Would you address Mr. Kane's argument that his suggestion that a venue is proper in more than one county and the trial court transfers the case to another county where the plaintiff could have filed, that and it's not a reversible error per se, that eliminates venue appeals, which is consistent with the legislature's intent.
The legislature was trying to do away with the interlocutory appeal, not the appeal. And the big compromise that they all agreed on was, all right, but if they do it wrong, or if it's wrong where they send it, then that's not going to be harmless. We're not going to have any of this harmless error argument. I think Justice Enoch is right on the nose when you ask, how could you show it? How could you possibly show to an appellate court that it was harmful?
Legislature made it harmful error per se.
Well, that's why they did it. Because you're going to either have to say the judge was biased or the jury was biased, and you're going to have to file a motion to change venue and go through that lengthy 257, 259 procedure in order to do it. That's what's going to have to happen. But I don't think it will, what I'm afraid that it will do is reinstate in another guise the old interlocutory appeal by mandamus. Because I think that there is no way he can say that, well, there's a way you might be able to squeeze out if there's two mandatory counties, maybe going to another mandatory county. But when the court says, this court said so clearly in 87, if a claimant had adequately pleaded and made promise that venue is proper and the county of suit is provided in Southern, then the cause shall not be transferred, but shall be retained in the county of suit. Now, if that doesn't give somebody a right to a mandamus when they say, nah, we're going to transfer it anyway. They got it in Henderson versus O'Neill, and all they did was they didn't give them a notice in here. A notice of it here. So, I'll be able to do it here. Are there any other questions?
Any other questions? Thank you, Phil.
Thank you very much.
That concludes the argument and the causes this morning. The foregoing causes are submitted on briefs and oral arguments, and the marshal will now please adjourn the court.